Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. This is an extra special episode, as this is episode number 100 for us here at the podcast. That does exclude our MedTech Money series, which is a separate podcast series where we have currently released 82 episodes. Generally, in the beginning of our My Episodes, I like to talk about what we covered on the specific podcast and also thank our sponsors. But because this is episode 100, I'd like to take some time to update some of the folks listening in on where Project MedTech started and where it has gone since inception. I founded Project MedTech in April of 2020 with the goal of bringing information to early stage startups in a format that was easy to consume, knowing that most startups don't have a lot of time to dedicate an entire hour to a webinar or even attending an event. In this scenario, they could listen to the podcast when you're out walking the dog, you're at the park, you're on your commute, etc. That is where Project MedTech started. And where we are current date is a lot different than just a podcast. So rather than boring you with the entire story of the evolution of Project MedTech, I'll just tell you where we currently are to date. Project MedTech is really two separate branches of one company. We have our consulting and advisory group where we help build successful MedTech companies. We are not focused on the hiring of talent. We're not a talent acquisition firm. We are a consulting and advisory firm where we fractionalize what we feel are positions that help get companies to that next big valuation point. We specialize in pre-seed, seed, Series A, and even Series B size companies by fractionalizing a lot of those roles. We can support in various areas like investment strategy, including due diligence assistant, pitch deck support, investor relations, warm introductions. We can help with product and project management, including product road mapping, milestone development, user and customer definition. We can help with business development, including go-to-market strategy, KOL development, exit strategy, commercialization strategy. We can help with corporate strategy, including brand development, hiring, enterprise resource planning. We can help with strategic financing, including financial and cap table modeling, board of director relations, forecast and burn rate analysis. And the goal is that we can help fractionalize those roles, knowing that most startups just don't need those types of resources full-time right now. We also have our media and network side of our company. And that is where the Project MedTech podcast sits, the one you're currently listening to. Another podcast called MedTech Money that sits in our platform, but is a separate channel where we focus on demystifying raising and investing capital, and it's hosted by my good friend and business partner, Giovanni Loricella. We also have our events on that side. We have virtual events called MedTech Happy Hours that happen once a month, where it is a webinar that is, everyone is encouraged to be on video. It is very interactive. It's laid back, but it's your chance as a startup to interact with other folks who are going to help make you successful in building your med tech company. We also have our in-person startup symposiums. We've done two this year, one in Akron, Ohio, one in Columbus, Ohio, and we have one in Houston, Texas, October 6th and 7th. We'll be doing three more next year, along with a flagship event that we can't necessarily discussed just yet until we have more details figured out. The other major piece we try to bring on our network and media side of our company is our referral network. We've found that a lot of startups either struggle or end up picking the wrong partners. And so our goal is to do due diligence and find people in the industry who really work with startup companies and were able to make recommendations for startups that are either engaged with us or just reaching out in general for support. So if you're a startup company and you don't need our consulting and advisory support, feel free to reach out to be connected to the rest of our network. With all that being said, I have to thank the Project MedTech team. Without them, the expansion of where we started to where we've gone would not be possible. For more information on our team, please check them out at our website, projectmedtech.com/about. If you want more information on everything I just covered, please head over to our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. Whew. With all that being said, that is definitely the longest opening you'll ever hear from me on this podcast, and hopefully ever again. So, without further ado, I couldn't be more excited to have David Sylvan and Brian Rothstein be a part of my 100th episode hosting the Project MedTech podcast. University Hospital Ventures has been an early partner and supporter of what we're trying to do at Project MedTech, so it only seems fitting that they are episode 100. So without further ado, my discussion with the president of University Hospital Ventures, David Sylvan, and the chief medical officer of University Hospital Ventures, Brian Rothstein.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Okay, David, Brian, welcome to the podcast.
How are you?
Doing great. Yeah, good morning. Usually when I'm doing them this early, it's with Europe. So this is weird that we're in the same city.
So you didn't go to Paris? I see that you have colleagues in Paris.
Yeah. Giovanni's there now. No, we didn't make the cut. anyway, so David, Brian, let's just go in order here and maybe give the listeners a brief intro into who you are and what you do.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. David Sylvan. I'm president of UH Ventures. We are the venture capital and innovation platform for university hospitals, Northeast Ohio. It is a 19 county, 23 hospital system, about 33 or so thousand employees, academic medical center with a very, very distinct focus on research. And let me hand it to Brian.
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. I'm Brian Rothstein. I'm a pediatric neurosurgeon. And if you were on video, you'd see the little skull above my head. That's my proof. That's part of my costume and how I do it usually. But I also have the great privilege of working with David and the Ventures team in the capacity of chief medical officer. Really, I spend my time kind of in the sandbox, both with our partners, as well as our colleagues within the healthcare system, our patients and in the community, trying to figure out what our problems are. How do we find the right solutions to have strategic initiatives, moving forward, really helping us do better for our patients, our providers, and our community?
Yeah. So Brian, real quick before you move on from your background here, anytime we have physicians on the podcast that are, you know, if they're on the podcast, they're clearly entrepreneurs, they're innovating, they're on this side of you know, health tech. What was it like making that decision? Just a little bit of that insight into, you know, hey, you are still practicing, but you only have so much time. So you're giving a good amount of time to innovation. I mean, what's that decision like? Why make that decision? What kind of made you want to do that?
It's a great question. I don't have a good answer for you other than I think my background kind of helps explain the story. So I'll take a brief interlude to share mm-hmm. my background beyond medicine. So when I graduated from high school, I wanted to be Jerry Maguire. That was it. That movie came out when I was in high school, and I was an athlete in high school, and I said, I want to represent athletes, or I want to work for Nike or something like that. So when I went to college, I immediately got ingrained in business education. I graduated of University of Miami in Florida, their undergraduate business school. with a focus in marketing. And I just threw myself into the industry. I got really lucky. Actually, David and I worked for the same company way back when. I don't think we actually ever crossed paths while we were there, but in the sports and entertainment field. And I spent a couple of years working there before I kind of realized that I wanted to be doing something different with my life. And it was purely a selfish decision with regard to, I just wanted to be doing more for other people. It was a great job. I loved the people that I worked with. It was a lot of fun, but it just wasn't satisfying enough for me personally from the engagement side of helping others. And that took me back to school and eventually to medical school. And when I got to medical school, I immediately said, like, why do we do it this way? Because I went to undergraduate business school, and in most business schools, you do things via case studies and you do things via group kind of think and shared knowledge and communication. And most medical schools aren't built that way. Case, where I went to medical school, is a very progressive medical school. So they do have small group learning and things like that. But there were just so many opportunities to ask the question, why do we do it this way? Why can't we do it a different way? And I think that that thought process is really what drove me down the path to where I am today. I entered residency and I started asking the same questions. Why do we do things this way in the operating room? Why do we buy this equipment and not that equipment if it's the same and it costs less money? Why do we have our patients come into the clinic this way when they could come into the clinic that way? Right? All about, you know, just thinking about different ways to use the kind of creative, innovative business side of my brain applied to healthcare. And over time that evolved. When I was a fifth year resident, I had the opportunity to do an administrative fellowship, learning more about hospital administration. Because at that point, I kind of realized that I wanted to exercise both sides of my brain. And that's when I was introduced to David and Kip from our platform. At that time, it was known as UH Innovations. And I was basically implanted within the UH Innovations team as kind of a clinical consultant, if you will. Yes. And really, it just kind of built from there and slowly but surely allowed me to evolve. I knew nothing about medical devices. I knew nothing about the FDA. It was really just the, I want to see us do things in a different way that's better for our providers and our patients. And over time, with experience and great mentorship from David, Kip, and the rest of the team, I have learned, you know, the lingo, if you will, and the vocabulary so that I can sit in the room and have the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I love these kind of stories, these backgrounds. I always find them fascinating. So selfishly, I really want to know it. And I just throw it off on the listeners as well. So real quick as well, David, so we're not here to talk about how the mechanics of how UH Ventures invest, right? So if you're listening and you want to hear that at the time this is released, episode 79 of MedTech Money will be released as well. That is the episode David did with Giovanni, where they kind of do a deep dive into the outside in approach, the inside out approach, how they invest, their different funds, all that good stuff. So if you want to know that, there is that episode as well. You mentioned Kip. Unfortunately, we weren't recording happy hours yet, but Kip did a happy hour with us and it was fantastic. If you haven't heard Kip talk, he's another one who's just incredibly elegant with how he talks about innovation. I find it fascinating.
Just interject for a second, Duane. Now Dr. Kip Lee. He successfully defended his dissertation and now he's Dr. Kip Lee.
I let him take some of my call now too. So it works out well for me.
And I will tell you, I sat through the defense, Duane, because I'm an adjunct faculty, so I'm sort of permissioned to do that. And not a walk in the park. When they say defense, I now understand why they use that word in the description of the process. But as you describe, Kip is remarkable, and he carried the day with ease.
Yeah, yeah. I would be willing to say that is. When I defended my thesis for my master's degree, it was probably 2 hours of the most uncomfortable thing I've ever done, because it is a lot of people smarter than you in the room asking you questions, trying to stump you, and but also not trying to stump you at the same time because they could if they wanted. But anyways, I I agree on the difficulty of that. The other thing I needed to add real quick too is you kind of talked about the team a little bit here at UH Ventures. it is a really cool environment. So the Project MedTech team had a chance to go down and meet everyone, and just the whole office space, I think is really cool. But the team of, is it 13 now? I mean,
15. Yeah.
15. Yeah. So maybe talk just real quick before we get into what we really want to talk about, which is, you know, how do you determine, or how do you look at the commercial viability of a product and how it fits in a healthcare system? Maybe talk about the growth of the team. You know, Brian, you kind of mentioned it, but David, from your perspective, it was you and Kip to start, or and then how did you grow?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting arc, Duane, because candidly, when we started out, we didn't quite know what the end point was, what the end state was. We had a thesis, and we applied the thesis, and candidly, we failed. We went down in flames. We made the incorrect assumption that we could impose this concept of design, human-centered design specifically, and this notion of innovation, which was ill-defined, upon a large organization, and they would intuitively come along for the ride, which is antithetical if you think about human-centered design. We didn't first start with the insights gathering process that we tout as part of the philosophy. So we erroneously thought that we could influence the entire organization, and it was a skunk works. There was a chief innovation officer who also happened to have the day job of president of a heart and vascular institute, amongst many other things. And it was a skunk works to start. It was Kip and I with no office space, sitting in lobbies or waiting rooms around our vast system, which actually ended up being invaluable for us from the perspective of immersion into healthcare, because neither one of us came from a clinical background. And we knew that we had to reconfigure and retool the team to meet the organization where it was at. For our misdeeds, we did inherit technology transfer, again, an area that, you know, we were largely unfamiliar with. But our lack of clinical, to Brian's reference, vernacular or syntax, was actually helpful, because we were able to be very, very provocative in the way in which we challenged well-honed assumptions. And so we sort of started again, Duane, a couple of years into that journey. We began to attract team members who were divergent in thought, diverse backgrounds, people very comfortable with ambiguity, not necessarily hardwired from a process perspective. And this motley crew began to have influence on our colleagues. We began to see manifestations of our own thoughts and our own influence reflected back to us. So we knew we were making some inroads. We did deploy a lot of social capital to create this coalition of the willing within the organization to help us on this journey. And we made the observation that innovation without teeth, in other words, innovation without the capacity to resource, lean in with people, time, and money to opportunities, would only take us so far. So we managed to prevail upon leadership to permission us to continue to tool our human capital around the expertise needed to do what we do in commercialization, do what we do in classic investment, and of course, now product developments and steadfast adherence to innovation in the traditional sense when it comes to human-centered design. So we've built a crew, a very flat organization of divergent individuals, some with product backgrounds, some with investment backgrounds, some with design, whether that be industrial or product or human-centered. And we work very effectively together because we manage every day to ensure that there is this notion of matrix and systemness, and not the self-imposed boundaries of lane lines when it comes to discipline. So very proud of this incredible team, humbled by them every day, learn from them every day. And everyone has the capacity to stop the production line. Everyone has the big red button, which is, I think, empowering as well.
So there's probably like three more episodes that have just come from that explanation there alone. But one of the things I'll just plug, and we should chat about this on another episode, is that flat model is very similar to W.L. Gore, if you're familiar with that organization. That sure. organization is a large company who has run on a very flat org chart model. And it's a really interesting case study. And honestly, I mean, not plugging Wikipedia, but if you're listening and you just want to get a high level overview, you should read their Wikipedia page, because it talks about the culture they've built. But it's really interesting. And that was kind of one of the takeaways from our meeting with you, was that, you know, when I'd walked in, it was like, this feels very W.L. Gore-ish of how everybody has a fairly equal voice at the table. And that's not all, I mean, that is not the case at most organizations. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Not the case in healthcare. Yeah. Healthcare is very traditionally hierarchical, and there are reasons and rationale for that. And Brian can probably expound upon that. But we also had to buck the trend from the perspective of the mothership as well. And again, once again, fortunate that we were permissioned to do so.
Yeah, that's really cool. So let's dive into determining commercial viability, I guess, of a product or healthcare fit. You know, is it going to be a fit in the healthcare system, and maybe how you evaluate that, right? So obviously a big piece of when companies are coming to you, whether you're going to invest or not, is going to be, okay, well, is it a fit in the process of the healthcare system? And that's a complicated question. It's why there's value analysis committees. And that's why on those value analysis committees sit physicians, and I'm sure nurses, and other clinicians, and financial folks. And there's a lot that goes into that. And I think that's pretty confusing for a lot of startups, right? I mean, when they're going through programs, they are talking to generally clinicians about issues they see, and this is how they solve them. And I'm not saying that's not a, it's not an ironclad like process, right? I mean, I watch some of these interviews, and sometimes clinicians are just telling you what you want to hear, because like, oh yeah, I could see that being a problem, you know? So as a startup, I mean, how do you weed through that a little bit? But more importantly, I guess, when you are sitting down, you get a product. What are you looking for in that product that says, hey, this gets to the next level, right? This gets to the next level. I mean, I imagine there's some screening processes here that help you in your evaluation.
Yeah, I think that's it's a great perspective and a great, you know, question to ask. I think it does portend to having to explain a little bit about our process. And I know that's obviously not the topic at hand today. But like, when we think about how we figure out what fits or doesn't fit, it starts very, very early on. Most of our deal flow, if you will, comes either from friends of ventures, VC firms, private equity firms, or just people that we know in the community who know of someone who's doing something, or through our partners like the Avias of the world, the Plug and Plays of the world. And, you know, we see, I don't know, we're up to like 10 to 15 a week sometimes now of things that come through. So we apply something called our spice filter. And to make it really simple without going through all levels of it, it's an acronym that we use that lets us kind of define, does this have legs for us as ventures and what we believe is a strategic imperative for our institution or not? So something's either mild, moderate, or spicy, right? We love the spicy ones. The moderate ones, usually we try to do a little bit more diligence on. If it's pretty mild and not so tangy in the mouth, we say thanks, but no thanks, okay? Yep. So let's say that we've established that something is spicy. That means that for us, in our opinion, it fits a strategic imperative or initiative for our institution. It's a need of a clinician or a need of a patient or a need of the community from a health and well-being perspective. It then requires us to really dig deep and find a KOL, or we like to call it a champion, who's going to be there to push this initiative through. Because at the end of the day, and this is one of the things that David and I talk a lot about, is the, you know, we kind of feel like the Yentas of UH, right? We're the matchmakers, right? We see the opportunity, we try to find the right person who could shepherd said opportunity, obviously with tremendous support and backing from the ventures team. But at the end of the day, we can't make a clinical initiative happen. We are not permissioned to do that. We need a physician, a nurse, an administrator, whomever it might be within the healthcare system, to actually do the do, if you will. So really, I would say on the front end, David, and you can kind of give your perspective on it, the way that we get that first inkling is finding the right champion who then shares that same excitement around, wow, this is something different. This is something that's going to change the way that we deliver care. Or, I mean, sometimes it's as simple as, I've never seen anything like this. This is just cool. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you get that kind of feedback very early on in the conversation, that then kind of permissions us to say, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Clearly a clinician or an administrator feels that there's value. It lines up with an initiative that we have at UH or within the community that we're working on. And then we start to have those more kind of deeper conversations. And this gets right down to the heart of your question of the, how do we prove that something is actually commercially viable? And that comes in many different formats. Sometimes it's the proof of concept pilot, right? And say, well, you have a pretty well-baked concept here. You can actually functional tool, device, whatever it is. Why don't we bring it into the system and pilot it for a couple of weeks and see what happens with it? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's the, well, actually, you're pretty early on in concept. It sounds amazing. You probably need some more clinical insight. Let's partner together and help you get those insights that you need to go from concept to prototype. And then on the far other end of the spectrum, you have a fully baked idea that is built out and ready to go. And it's really a conversation around, is this something that we could bring into our healthcare system and deploy immediately for benefit to, again, provider, patient, whomever the audience is. And then that's really when we get down that conversation of the, all right, who's the right leader to help us negotiate that conversation? And those are the ones that tend to be more technologically based as opposed to device based, because oftentimes the devices that we're seeing are way too early for immediate implementation.
Right.
And so that's kind of the big picture side of it. But it really, honestly, what we have learned in the last 3.5 years is if you don't have the champion who's engaged, invested, and ready to just go to battle with you, there's not enough legs to make it work. Because we've tried. We've had ideas. We've had products that have come to us that have been, you know, we'll sit in the office together and we'll play with the thing. And this is incredible. Like if I could have this right now in the operating room, it would change the way that I do things.
Yeah.
But if we don't have somebody who can help shepherd that process or who's excited about it too, it fails miserably every time. And so that's really the ethos behind it is partnership, matchmaking, and then the process begins in terms of the evaluation structure, building, connecting different parts of the community together to build a coalition of the willing around said product, whatever it might be, or opportunity system of care to drive it forward and really engage with our community.
You know, what I didn't realize, what I didn't appreciate coming to this early is there's four or maybe more thresholds of decision when it comes to a new opportunity. It's the who uses, it's the who benefits, it's the who pays for and buys, and then it's the who measures. And those are usually different constituencies, which makes selling into healthcare, as you know, Duane, so much more complex than other industries. I came out of investment banking. I began to do some of my own angel investing. I would come across technologies, medtech technologies, to Brian's point. I thought I was looking at Star Wars. They were amazing. I didn't have any appreciation for what it might take for that opportunity to gain some traction within the provider setting. Remember, it's a zero-sum game. If we bring in a tool, it is invariably designed to displace or replace an existing tool or process. There could be a contractual reasons why that's just impossible. There are usually workflow implications that people really have to appreciate. Integration with EMR and EHR, not to ever be trivialized, are important pipes to connect. So all of these layers of complexity shroud the wonderful opportunity, but have to be solved for before there's any opportunity to see if there's traction.
Yeah. So that is selling into, again, for me, who was really, generally, I was not in the commercialization area, right? Most of my background was supporting companies, getting them to regulatory approval or clearance. And then a lot of times it was, okay, well, great. Good luck with everything, right? And then as I started working more and more with startups and getting more and more into this commercialization side, you start to see this, you know, I think there's, I don't know, 90% of products are 510Ks in the US, right? So meaning they're substantially equivalent to something else on the market. So you can only be so much better. I mean, there are really disruptive 510Ks, no doubt, but most of them are slightly better than whatever's out there. They're modifications. So, I don't know, 1,000 or 2,000, or, and there's a lot of approvals a year by the FDA. And I mean, even if it's 500, 90% of them fail, right? They don't commercialize. They're just on the market approved and that's it. So, it's obviously very, very difficult. I always equate, well, first of all, Brian, you were kind of hitting on an underlying point we talk about on the podcast a lot, which is the team is really freaking important. And out of all the episodes we've done, every investor we've talked to, minus one, has said that they pretty much look at the team first and then the product. One person said that he would look at the product first because he can replace the team. And I was like, well, you're saying the same thing. So anyways,
I would say, just on that point, I mean, yeah. You know, as we go through our process, right, you know, when we're looking at those types of things, the team matters, mm-hmm. you know, very much, and not just our team, the team that developed the product matters very, very much so. We've had horror stories here too, where, you know, fit the product was a revolutionary product, but from a personality perspective, it just didn't work. And right. And sometimes it's hard to plan for that. And when that happens and the bomb drops and you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. Never expected that type of situation or that type of interaction. And then you kind of have to put your hat back on and say, well, listen, at the end of the day, we are a healthcare institution that has a mission to heal, to teach, and to discover. And if anybody that we're going to work with doesn't align with those very three simple key rules of engagement, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
Dwayne, I'll be even more provocative, you know, in terms of is team or product more important? I say product actually comes third. I think team okay. and problem are one and two and maybe interchangeable. Yes. And this gets to the core theme of today's conversation about commercial viability. We spend a relentless amount of time unpacking and rebuilding problems because we're assailed with here's this thing and here's the TAM and here's our path to get there. We really spend a lot of time trying to affirm that that problem is a scalable real problem. Then can a team execute upon a plan to solve for that problem? There could be a number of different technological paths to get there. The enablement comes third for us. I'm not relegating it. Actually, no, I am relegating it. There are different ways to solve for the same thing. Is it a real problem? Can a team execute upon a plan to get there?
Another fantastic point. Another underlying thing we talk about frequently too is there are really cool products that solve just maybe not a big enough problem, or maybe the problem could be solved in an easier way. And actually, I just quickly looked it up. David Ferreira is up episode 68, and he's a serial entrepreneur. He's exited five companies and he has three more currently. But he did have one failure and he shared the failure on the podcast. And he was so open about it, which was really nice when some entrepreneurs maybe aren't, they don't really want it. They want to talk about the successes, not the failures. And his product was, I'll butcher it. So if you want to listen to it, you can, but it was the premise of it was a catheter to reduce infections. And he thought, oh, this is such a problem. It's going to be great. The hospitals are going to love it. The hospitals did love it. Everybody loved it. And he actually just changed the habits of the nurses. So the nurses and physicians just started administering an antibiotic when the patients came into the hospital, and they didn't need the catheter anymore because no one had infections, right? So, you know, it's just one of those things. Again, I could have butchered that a little bit, but he shares it there. So, but again, it's one of those things where the problem just maybe wasn't as bad as he initially thought it was, or you know, people just hadn't thought about it yet enough. So I love that you're bringing up that example.
I think that I'm going to interrupt for 1 second. I think that that's also a really important part of the innovation process, right? Because even though his product failed, he had a positive influence on the environment that he was working in. And I think that that's something that was really important for people to understand that are trying to get into this space. At the end of the day, we're just trying to make things better, right? We're trying to influence people's lives and their health and their well-being. Now, yes, is there a delta that needs to be met in terms of, you know, the debits and credits of a healthcare institution? We exist to create alternative revenue streams, and we don't, you know, we don't sugarcoat that. All that being said, all of the work that we are doing in the process that leads to that is about the betterment for our community and the betterment of the health and well-being of people. And sometimes a product, you identify a problem, you tried to build a product to fit that hole or fill that gap, and that product doesn't work. It's not adopted or whatever reason, but you've at least put laser focus on what the problem is. And by doing so, you're hopefully inspiring other people to start engaging around how to solve that problem in the healthcare system. And I think we've seen examples of that here where we haven't been able to fix the problem from outside, but it has inspired innovation within. I mean, we have one of the companies that we've spun out is exactly that. You know, it's the blood management software tool that we have that we've spun out of Ventures. And there was a problem within the institution for blood management. They looked everywhere to try to fill the gap, and they couldn't fill the gap, but it inspired three people to get together and said, okay, how can we fix this problem by ourselves? And it took them a long time, but they figured it out and eventually became a company. So that's just, you know, to highlight failure in innovation oftentimes leads to success as long as you can kind of be diligent and stay on track.
Yeah.
You're influencing behaviors, to your point, Dwayne. It's behavioral nudging sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, you know, one of the other quotes I bring with me, I mean, it was all the way back in episode 4, but came from a hospital venture group. It was out of the Texas Medical Center. Lance Black said, you know, if you're going to look at a problem, be a historian of the problem, and don't just be a problem solver, but understand all the ways it was tried to solve in the past, because some of those things maybe just weren't ready yet. And now is the time. And so that one always kind of rung true with me. One of the questions I have for you is, so I always equate running a med tech startup, health tech startup, to you're in a dark room, everyone shuts all the lights off, and they dump a bunch of junk in your way, and you got to get to the other side of the room somehow. And that's how it feels sometimes. And you try to work with people who have a flashlight and kind of can show you where the speed bumps are and where the pitfalls are and where everything is. What are the ones at that commercialization phase that are like the gotcha moments? I mean, what are some of those that as you're trying to look for, you know, is this going to fit in to the healthcare system that, you know, you might see that light and then all of a sudden, boom, you're blindsided. I mean, what are some of those in a general sense?
Yeah, I've got a couple, and then Brian, you can add some. Increasingly, mismanagement of data is a huge, huge red flag. And the inability to address the conveyance and the sanctity of data during the build phase of the product is really something that can upend you at the end. It might work as a tool, it might even solve the problem. But if for some reason it becomes leaky from a data perspective, or it doesn't act as a, the conveyance of that data isn't enabled by the tool, the technology in an appropriate way, in a compliant way, that is an upender. And then candidly, just this notion of believing that IT has infinite capacity to always just work with the startup to integrate their tool into process and workflows. And it's increasingly almost the one of the first questions we ask is, this thing is great. Do we have any mind share and capacity within you know, our product teams and IT to actually help us move this to a point of some form of adoption? So I think the IT partnership piece, the data sanctity piece, those are two. There are many, but those are two. Brian, what do you think?
I'll add on to the data sanctity piece is the transparency associated with that, meaning that if you recognize that there is a challenge, but you are unable to, for whatever reason, convey that concern or that challenge that this might be a problem in the future, that's also essentially a non-starter, right? Because if we find out or we learn about challenges in data security, just whatever it might be, right? You could think of all the potential nightmare situations with regard to HIPAA compliance and things like that when we're talking about technology. If there's not really great, and this comes back to the team piece of it, there's not really great open communication, then that becomes really challenging. And that can be a very, very simple hard stop. I would say the other one, more on the tangible product side, is a failure to recognize a really important part of the food chain, right? You know, we've talked to the doctor, you've talked to the value analysis committee, you've talked to the president of the hospital who's going to be purchasing said device, right? Everybody's aligned, they understand the financial implications of it. And then you come back and, you know, the scrub tech and the, you know, the central sterilization, you know, core team member is like, no, this doesn't work in the workflow that we have. You're completely changing everything that we do for one little thing. And that's just a failure to recognize who's important in the food chain when you make the decisions, because sometimes it's really easy to overlook that very, very critical component to what's happening from whatever the process is, because you don't see them on the front line.
We will sponsor a journey mapping process with some of our engagements, Duane, for exactly that reason. We really want to find that node, that link or kink in the chain that could be the upender that might appear innocuous when you sort of do the voiceover. But you have to walk through the entire life cycle of utilization. And so for a lot of our early companies where we do engage from the perspective of, let us give you the insights, we'll deploy a journey mapping process to uncover and unearth exactly those challenges.
I love that because Project MedTech Consulting has been around for, at the time we're recording this, 5 months. I mean, we haven't been around long, but a lot of our clients are going through commercialization, and some have, some kind of are learning as they've gone into it, and others are taking a lot of time to really take in voice of customer. And we did an episode back in the 50s with Devin Campbell from Product, which is a as it sounds like he's a design consultant, right? So he helps with this in product design. And he talks about voice of customer as you're designing a product. His is more from like the med tech company, maybe not so much the end user side as well. You know, his point was, hey, there's the end user, there's the patient, there's the regulatory, the reimbursement, there's all these things, and that makes sense. But to think about the journey mapping process within a hospital and all the different people that could derail, you know, your product adoption, and really spending like, There's times where it's not okay to over-index on something. And then there's times where maybe over-indexing is okay. And this is probably one of those times of, hey, you have the obvious ones, but what are some of those ones that aren't so obvious that as a non-clinician, you don't know, right? And so I think that's probably where it's difficult for a non-clinician to understand, because you go, you observe, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, the physician's making the big decision and the nurses are bought in. And then that's, you're like, well, that's everybody, you know? And then it's like, well, no, there's so many things going on. And I think that's the innate value that the both of you, venture groups, hospital groups, you know, kind of bring to the table when you're thinking about commercialization. Because there's just things that, like you said, David, at the beginning, right? When you were watching, you were sitting in these rooms watching, there's things that there's just no way we would have, we would understand. And so, Brian, obviously you get that. So what are some of those? You kind of brought some up, but what are some of those other ones that you just maybe don't think of that are downstream or upstream that people should be aware of? And if it's difficult to classify, that's okay too. I don't know.
No, I think that, I mean, there's, I think that you can kind of define it by people and process, right? Okay. So, you know, when you're talking about, it's sometimes, I'll back up for a second. I think it's important to define by what the it is, right? Mm-hmm. Because certain its are technology, which require people and process, right? Sometimes there are products that actually only require people, right? There's not a lot of process to them other than, you know, if it's a disposable product, you know, listen, you open a package, the surgeon uses it, you throw it away type of thing, mm-hmm. right? So I think you can define where the challenges exist by thinking about people and process always. And that's, you know, the advice that we always give to the startups is be a sponge and really ask questions about, well, who's involved in this product's lifecycle? Take a digital technology, and I'll go to David's example on the IT side, right? Any digital technology in a healthcare organization requires IT support, right? And it's not so easy just to flip a switch and let something turn on and sit on top of the EMR or even inside the EMR. Integration, a truly integrated single sign-on event for a digital technology is like moving the earth out of its orbit sometimes. And I say that tongue in cheek, but it's real.
Yeah.
Healthcare data systems are so complex and so multi-layered, even in fully integrated systems that are on a single platform. Plugging into those systems can be very time consuming and very expensive. And if a startup doesn't understand that piece of it, it can be an absolute game changer for them from a funding perspective, right? If they don't realize that, yes, well, my product only costs this much per discharge, right? And then the IT consultant comes back and says, well, just to install your device on our system is the equivalent of $100,000 worth of people effort. All of a sudden that changes your entire pricing model, mm-hmm. right? And it's a monumental shift in perspective. So that's one example. People examples. Who are the people who actually physically touch the product, right? In its entire life cycle, from the guy who's there on the loading dock to unload the truck, to the person who packs it in the sterile pack, it's a surgical tool, to the person who stocks it on a shelf, to the person who uses it, right, and disposes of it. You need to understand how each of those people are affected by the process and what influence they have on the product lifecycle itself too. And that's just understanding the use of the product. Then the next layer of that is how do you actually have the conversation with supply chain value analysis and the chief financial officer to get it in the door. Yeah. So there's three layers of things that you have to think about with every new product, service, device that comes into a healthcare system that you don't think about in the traditional startup landscape, right? Someone has a great idea for a company. They get online, they record their, you know, their elevator pitch. They take it out to the angel networks that are available to them. Here's my product. I designed a new sneaker and it's awesome, right? Like, you should check this out. Here's whatever it is, right? You know, and you get enough people excited about it who put enough money into it, you could actually go out and build the product and maybe sell it, right? Mm-hmm. But you're selling to consumers most of the time. Maybe sometimes you're selling to businesses. I would argue, and I think I love David's perspective on it, I don't think that there is any more complex organizational structure than a healthcare system in terms of getting something new from outside into it.
Well, and the challenge is that is a metaphor for a lot of what is broken in healthcare, yeah. Because instead of real-time fixes from the perspective of process dysfunction, we tend to continue to patch and bolt on. And we then end up exacerbating a process versus ameliorating it. And, you know, actually listening to you, Brian, I'm getting kind of depressed. It's really difficult, this stuff. But we obviously never want to dissuade the startups, because there are platforms like ours and our peers around the country who want to act as that front door, as that enablement to solve for many of these self-imposed challenges and issues that ordinarily these startups would have to try to navigate on their own. Even our own champions, the ultimate beneficiary, if you will, besides the patient, they themselves don't have the wherewithal to understand that entire continuum within a complex system. So you need platforms like ours to help to clear the landmines, if you will.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it. And I certainly don't want to play Debbie Downer in the conversation. I think that, you know, what's important about the discussions that you have with the startups early on is say, listen, it's not simple, but if you're diligent and you're willing to partner and you're willing to have the hard conversations, you can overcome the challenges that exist. I mean, there's plenty of great examples of how people have done it, but I think it's really important for people to understand that to get in requires work, but once you're in and you have a positive influence on the system, it is transformational for our providers and our patients. That's all of the work that we're doing. Again, it comes back to this core idea of how do we influence and how do we make it different and make it better for our patients and our providers? And so is it hard? Yeah, but that's why we like doing the work. And that's what's exciting about it every day.
Yeah. I mean, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And and also what kind of opened my eyes to that too is like, just take like Manny Villafana for an example, right? The founder of St. Jude. I mean, he's like the godfather of cardiovascular innovation, you know, theoretically, right? And so, you know, when I first, it's like, okay, like this is so hard. Why do people do it? There's a lot of people who have done it successfully, right? I mean, you got to be a problem solver and you got to be diligent, and there's plenty of resources to help you do this and get through the process. And you know, you can go through the list of the podcast, and I always find this, you know, fascinating is like when I'm talking to people, like, have you had this person? And I'm like, no, I don't even know who they are, right? But they're successful med tech entrepreneurs who have brought in a product to market and made a difference. And that's just what always encouraged me, is there's a ton of people out there. I mean, I could do 1,000 episodes of this podcast and still not know who people are when they talk about successful entrepreneurs. So it's definitely doable, right? This is more or less, hey, we're not being Debbie Downers. We're just telling you where the pitfalls are, right? We'll do another episode because there's more to talk about, especially on why the healthcare system is so difficult. You know, that's obviously a pretty fiery conversation because there's politics involved. But one thing that I've heard from almost all the MDs that have been on is they either call healthcare sick care, or they talk about the training in med school, and that the books are generally out of date. And so that was some of the feedback they've given before. Brian, if you want to comment on it, you can. I mean, but they'll use those times to take healthcare, sick care, really, and that, you know, the anatomy books and stuff that we learned on when we were in graduate school were from 2000 instead of 2010, right? But
I will give two comments on that. So yeah. I think that yes, in the world that we live in today, we have an opportunity to think about health or the delivery of health in two ways. It's a binary approach. Either it's taking care of sick people and making them better, or it's a more holistic approach of saying that, well, there are different episodes of your life. Sometimes you're sick and sometimes you're healthy, but as a healthcare institution, it's our responsibility to help care for you throughout your entire wellness journey. Mm-hmm. And that's really my perspective on it, and the perspective that we try to take here in terms of how we think about people, because you're just a person, right? And sometimes you're healthy and sometimes you're not. And that's our job, is to help figure out ways to keep you healthier longer and feeling better longer than not. as it pertains to the educational side, yeah. And I think that that's the other interesting aspect of innovation and where we are today is how do we continue to try to force the educational models to change to keep up with where we are? You know, we, you know, here we have, I'm bringing this out for a second. What? You're not going to see it, but I'm going to talk about it because I need it in my hands to talk about it. I'm holding a HoloLens right now. And, you know, how do we change the way that we teach anatomy using augmented reality instead of looking at it in books so people can be in it and experience it in three dimensions, right? That's something that we work on here. And so there's always opportunity. It goes back to my first statement. You know, I've always been someone who likes to ask the question, why do we do it that way? Why can't we do it differently? And I think that if we can continue to have that kind of dialogue always with the startups that we're working with your team at Project MedTech, you know, we will continue to evolve the healthcare field in such a way that it will become easier to navigate. Our doctors and nurses will be at top of license always because they'll have on-demand access to the educational tools that they need. And we'll be able to bring in the products and services that that make caring for every person, no matter their episode of care, healthy or not, better and easier. And that's really the fun part of what we do.
Amen.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what a way to end. David, Brian, hang on for a minute. We'll chat offline here for a second, but really appreciate both your time this morning. This was a very fun conversation. I don't think it was negative. I really do think it was just, this is what to be aware of and some really, really strong advice, but really enjoyed chatting with both of you this morning.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.